Welcome back to the Gospel Sports Truth Podcast. Man, we have a lot to talk about today. Some series that have come to an end, some series that still have quite a bit of intrigue around them in both the NBA and the NHL. I will cover it all. I am your host, Jose, the Fantasy Football Fiend, and I have my guy, the one and only, BK Wins. Holla at the people, BK.
Hey, y'all.
So, with that being said, remember, you can see us now on YouTube at The Gospel STP. Again, that's at The Gospel STP. And if you have not joined the Facebook group, what are you waiting on? That is The Gospel Sports Truth Facebook group. Join today. You get a whole bunch of interaction, a lot more information, a lot more up-to-date stuff because we pretty much post it as it happens. So make sure you do that if you have not yet. With that being said, let's go right ahead and hop into the show. What's the good word of the week, BK?
Well, we're going to start with the NBA playoff results and reactions with updates so far. So between last week's show and this week's, the Cavs, the Celtics, and the Pacers have all advanced to the second round in the Eastern Conference. The Knicks are currently playing as we air this game six at Detroit. They lead 3-2. Another chance to knock out the Pistons in advance to the second round where they'd face the Celtics. In the West, we have two winners. Oklahoma City, of course, they thundered their way past Memphis, a clean sweep there. The Timberwolves upset the Lakers 4-1. And then the other half, we're going to see a game six. Later tonight, Denver takes on the Clippers. Denver leads 3-2. And then tomorrow night, the Warriors face the Rockets in game six in Golden State. Of all of these series at this point, what is your reaction so far, knowing that we have five of them done and three more pending?
The Pistons are a lot better than I gave them credit for before the playoffs started, is my first reaction. I won't say biggest, I'll say first. The Cavs may actually be more than regular season ready. I thought that they would end up being somewhat like OKC was last year. I don't know if they're going to have the jitters or the first time in the playoffs as a team mistakes. It's feeling like what you got during the regular season is what you're going to continue to get, which is going to be a very fascinating series between them and the Pacers. I'm looking forward to that. The Celtics did what they were supposed to do against the Magic, is what it is. The Rockets, can we just say that, how do I say his name? Udoku? Is that right?
Udoku, yeah.
Can we just say that he's a great coach? We kind of gave a little bit of the credit to the players that played for the Celtics. He said, okay, well, hold my beer, and went to a team that really no one wanted to coach. And now they look like the Celtics West in style, not in matchup to matchup, player to player, but he's showing you that he can get out of any team what he got out of what was the best team when he was there, being the Celtics. So I love what I'm seeing there from the Rockets. I still believe Golden State will take the series, but it'll be a very fun series. OKC did what they were supposed to do. T-Wolves, Lakers. This one for me, not what I foresaw, but I understand what I saw, is the easiest way that I can put it. They have two starting centers. We don't have one. They can score in the paint. They can keep us from scoring in the paint. Game over. That's pretty much what I saw. We got to get a center. And that's that. There are no two ways about that. And seeing the game plan that they used to kind of take the Lakers out, there was no yin to the yang chess move matchup that the Lakers could have gone to change the way that the Timberwolves were playing. They went with two big men clogging up the post with Reed and Gobert, and it kept us from getting to the post. And when they got in the post, it was a pretty easy score. Or they could kick it back out, and Reed is now all of a sudden a 3-and-D specialist, and he can score and defend the post. So, yeah, it was the kryptonite. Like, there's so many better matchups. Like, that. Put it like this. There's so many other teams in the West that don't have the issues in the post that the Wolves present. That would have been a much better matchup, but it was a kryptonite to the Lakers. And the good thing about it is they'll solve this, I'm confident, this offseason, the same way that they've gone about solving other issues. So better luck next season. We'll see what happens. And worst case scenario, a couple years from now, LeBron will be off the books. And who knows? We'll go big game hunting again, maybe pull in a Jokic or a Giannis. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But the arrow's still pointing up for the Lakers. I mean, I'm not pressed.
Yeah. So first, the Cavs of any playoff team, they've been the most impressive. What they did in Game 3 and Game 4. I mean, when you play a proud Miami team and you're up 111-63 through three quarters, you're up 58, almost 60 points through three quarters in a playoff game that matters. That's crazy. Oh, by the way, and Garland didn't play in Game 3 or 4. So you also didn't have his 25 points a game as well. So just really impressive by the Cavs. Yeah. I'll be interested to see how they play against the Pacers. The Pacers did make the Eastern Conference Finals last year, as we all remember. They were a little lucky because of injuries, kind of snake bit the teams they got through. But what I'll say is the Pacers play a breakneck tempo, where they're going to score a ton of points. So I'll be curious to see how they're able to hold up over a 7-game series against the Cavs in that kind of situation. To the Pistons' credit, give Bickerstaff a lot of credit. I mean, he's had this team turned around pretty quickly. Cunningham's a stud. Schroeder's done really well. Tobias Harris has filled in. Those two players have fit in their roles really nicely. But Cade Cunningham is a stud, and the needle's up for them, especially when you see teams like the Bucks on the way down. We'll talk more about them later, but you know they're going to move up the pecking order because of that. In the West, the Thunder did what the Thunder did. The last two games weren't how you'd probably draw it up, having to erase almost a 30-point deficit and then squeaking by a Morantless Grizz in Game 4. But you never have to apologize for a win in the playoffs. So they did a really good job. The Lakers and the T-Wolves we'll talk about a little bit later. So I won't really empty the toolbox on that yet. I think Golden State, give the Rockets credit. Everything you said about the Rockets is true, and I agree. As far as just the Game 5 match in Houston last night, I'm just going to say this. The Warriors played like they had a 3-1 lead and just wanted to go home and close it out. It didn't feel like they really played their A game or tried very hard. They're like, you can have this one. We'll be ready for you in Game 6. We'll see you in the Bay. And then the Clippers, like, this team has so much talent.
Yeah.
And they find new ways to choke away games. It's crazy to me how consistent they are at finding defeat from victory. That's what they do. They snatch defeat from victory on the regular. Like, if there was a title for that, they would be repeating champions. Because they do it every single playoff series, it feels like. There's no way this Nuggets team should be beating them. They fired their coach and GM before the playoffs. They're a disarray. Jokic is a stud, so I'm not even going to talk. I mean, his greatness doesn't even need a conversation. We know he's a stud. But Murray kind of picks and chooses where he's going to show up. He's been banged up. He all of a sudden drops 43 like he's been doing it all year. And now they're down 3-2. That just is crazy to me. But I'm really looking forward to the second round because this is, for me, the most compelling part of the playoffs.
Gotta agree. Gotta agree. Now, the NHL playoffs are hot and heavy as well. A lot going on. East and West, the Leafs up 3-2 on the Senators. The Panthers are waiting on their next opponent. You got the Canes and the Capitals coming up. In the West, you got the Jets up 3-2 over the Blues. The Stars up 3-2 over the Avs. Vegas up 3-2 over Minnesota. Orders up 3-2 over the Kings. Anything surprising you about the current results, or is it kind of trending towards what you thought would happen, if not in the way you thought it would happen?
So the Canes and the Capitals were so much better than their first-round opponents. It doesn't surprise me they steamrolled their way past their opponents. In the West, what's interesting to me is, you know, the Jets were the top seed. All three matches at home, they squeaked out really close matches, including two of them in overtime. However, when they went games 3 and game 4 at St. Louis, St. Louis drilled them by a combined 12-3, 7-2 in game 3, 5-1 in game 4. Game 6 will be in St. Louis here tomorrow. Really interested to see how that goes. But if you notice, unlike the NBA where some of these series ended quickly, every one of these Western matchups are going at least 6 games. And the team that I would really, really have on panic alert is the team that I talked about before the playoffs. You know, the team that hasn't won the cup in the longest reigning drought in history, the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, they were up 3-0 over Ottawa. They lost game 4 in overtime. They come home for game 5. They don't score a goal. So now they're up 3-2, game 6 going on as we speak in Ottawa. It's a win or back home for game 7. And if you're not familiar about Toronto's choking job, in the last 15 times that Toronto's had a chance to close out a series, they're 1-14.
Pretty sure that gives the other team a little bit of confidence there in the situation.
1-14. Like,
Are we going to hear about this situation a little bit later, or?
We will not.
Okay. I figured I'd ask. I want to ask about something else, too, that kind of hits home for you in a way, and also our good friend Young Vander, based on your college allegiance. Former Florida State star quarterback Jordan Travis has medically retired from the NFL. And he stated he never really fully recovered from the leg injury. And on advice of doctors, he's going to call it a day. So I know this is a guy that you and Vander probably saw more of than most based on being Florida State fans. Melancholy. Happy trails to the Jets, former quarterback that never really kind of got off the ground, if you will.
Yeah, so it's really a sad thing, you know, because he had a terrific year leading to the Noles to an undefeated season, winning the ACC championship. Obviously, the gruesome injury that happened towards the end of the season that we all know about. But for the young man who's a positive person, he says and does all the right things. He's a class A human being. To never even be able to play an NFL snap, I can't even imagine what that must feel like, you know? And so really sad for him. I can't imagine how disappointed he is. But, you know, medically, he did the right thing based on the advice of his doctors. He just hasn't been able to make a full recovery. But it's too bad. The injury that it reminds me of in terms of a talent, not that I'm comparing the players or the injuries.
Todd Gurley? Todd Gurley?
I was actually thinking about Lattimore.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. Because he didn't really get to do anything with the 49ers, although he was drafted. And yeah, that makes sense.
You know, a first-class human being, a great player in college whose injuries just never allowed them to play in the NFL. And it's unfortunate, really is. I hate it for both of them. But But, you know, football is a physical, physical, demanding game. And there's a reason why the average NFL career is 3.5 years. And it's not because it's easy on the body or easy to do.
And that, my friend, is the truth. Speaking of the truth, we might as well go ahead and hop into the truth and nothing but the truth. And the first topic is a doozy. And it is the NFL draft. What's behind Shedeur Sanders' epic fall? Who's to blame? Reactions to the owners demanding teams remove Sanders from their draft board based on his attitude. I gotta say, BK, this is one of those things where you gotta kind of be able to read the room for me. Then let me put that out there first. You're going on a job interview. And when you go on that job interview, there's definitely something to be said for confidence, for sure. But sometimes if you go into a job interview acting as if you already have the job or making demands on the ones who are going to decide whether or not you get said job, you can't be upset with them when they say, for this particular position on the field, I don't want that. Whatever that is, and I might not even be able to put an actual label on whatever it was, I felt, heard, experienced within interview processes. This wasn't a singular opinion as far as the interview processes were concerned. And again, we're talking about essentially making the decision to hand over your franchise, which makes millions or billions or whatever it may be, depending on said team. And this is going to be the face of that franchise. Do you want more of what you saw there, or do you want something different? That's what it really boils down to me. And I know a lot of people may say, you know, hey, you know, there's been plenty of other guys who did this, that, or the third, and cool, you're right. That's not untrue. But when we talk about people essentially saying that, let me put it this way. The environment that we're in today, in comparison to the environment that was there the last time we saw something like this going on, which goes all the way back to Eli Manning, that's what most people are comparing it to. People in the offseason, if you will, or before the draft, saying where they would prefer not to play, or the type of team that they don't want to be drafted to, when their father is saying things like, hey, I got to do what's best for my son. And if that means doing what the Mannings did, pulling a move like that, like, this isn't the same atmospheres back then, because there's a 24-hour news cycle. There was no Twitter. There was no, I'm trying to remember what year that happened. There might not have been social media in general. I don't think it was. But like, the dissemination of information and the fast-growing development of opinions that we have today in this environment is way different than that. And the other thing was, I don't know if you saw the clips and everything, but the way certain things were said versus the bravado or the lack of humility, if you will, in the approach in those two different situations, there's something to be said there as well. All I can say is there were opportunities to be had by several. But the good thing that happens here is, because he wasn't drafted early, he won't be held to a contract that'll keep him from making his big money as a quarterback, which is normally that second contract, if he does what he needs to do to get where he needs to go. And let's be honest, he's not hurting for money. And if he went into this as if he needed the job versus already having the job, you'd have been drafted a lot higher. And that just is the truth. Like, no matter how we feel about that piece of it, that's the truth. What everyone is saying is the interviews and the way he came off, it made a lot of people feel some kind of way. And maybe you wait until after you get hired to show you're behind, whatever that felt like or looked like behind closed doors, we'll never know. But for that many teams that needed a quarterback just to say, nah, we'll pass on you, and to draft lesser quarterbacks, you can't say it's racial. The first person drafted was a black quarterback to a quarterback needy team. It has to be him, regardless of whether you agree with it being him or his camp or whether you agree that it should matter the way that they went about doing what they did. That's a completely different conversation. All I can tell you is the way they did what they did obviously and utterly had an impact on what we saw on draft night. And that's just the truth.
Yeah, very well said. So here's the thing. Piggybacking on what you said, we're in a different time in social media. You know, what John Elway did years ago in Eli Manning's camp did years ago, it's just not a practical way in the world we live in. News is so fast that you just can't operate that way. And look, part of the blame is on Dion specifically for saying where his son will or won't be willing to play. At the end of the day, you're not entitled to anything. So you need to be grateful for whoever drafts you and prove that you're going to be the best player no matter what situation or what team you're on. If you have anything attitude other than that, the problem is you. No one else but you. And
you know what, BK? And this may be the get off my lawn segment, because a lot of these like younger kids, like, it's just different. I get it. It's different. But you have to be aware of who it is that's hiring you. There are guys that are old enough to be my father. So if this is getting on my nerves, I can't imagine how they're taking now. And don't hear what I'm not saying, that there is a place for boldness and bravado. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But you can't take it past a certain point without it just blowing up in your face. So,
well, the thing for me is the draft is a job interview. Mm-hmm. And you have people, who do you think is going to win the battle between a player and the owner? It's never the player, not in the NFL. The owner is going to win 100 out of 100 times.
The owner is also going to win the battle between the owner and the GM. So quit pissing off the owner.
Correct. So at the end of the day, if I'm Shedeur Sanders and I'm going on this job interview, when they criticize or provide feedback for something you didn't do right in tape, and you're like, no, I'm good, you have it wrong. And by the way, if you draft me, you better make sure you have the right culture, because I'm not coming to these kind of situations if you don't have your stuff figured out. Like, you please go to any interview with any company ever and say those things and tell me how that's going to go. I'll save you the time. You're going to have a problem. They'll be like, next, we'll find somebody else. Now, look, he has a world of talent. And yes, he was very clearly the second most talented quarterback in the draft. I don't think anybody from a talent perspective would disagree with that. However, there's a right and wrong way of handling things. I'll never fault anybody for being confident. I like that he has personality. I like that he's bold. I like that he tells you how it is. It's refreshing. You don't get the, like I do all the time, and give senator answers. I appreciate how bold he is. However, after the interview, when you're drafted and you have your money, then start talking about what you're going to do. Not during the interview when you don't have anything. You can't piss in your Cheerios. And that's what he was trying to do.
You can't tell someone not to hire you if they don't have their stuff together And it's organizations that have never had their stuff together. It's kind of offensive to a certain extent. I mean, like, why do you think we're drafting this high? And you got the gall to come in and tell us not to draft. Okay, wish Grant. And you know what? It almost felt like the NFL punished him by indicating that, hey, guess what? Not only are you going to have to go to Cleveland, but you're not going to get paid while you're there, at least the first go round. That's it, it felt like collusion. And remember, the one team that was spoken of as the team that wouldn't be a good fit for him or that he wouldn't want to go to per his father, they literally said Cleveland at number two. Deion's response was, I might have to pull a Manny. So when you're in round five, now all of a sudden you're just happy to answer the phone versus having a fight about whether or not you actually want to play it.
And hope it's not a prank call.
It, that part, because it could have been again. So, yeah. But on to another issue on another team, the Bucks. Who's to blame? Should the Bucks trade Giannis? I mean, like, there's a lot going on in Milwaukee. And the first thing that they did that didn't make much sense was hire Doc Rivers. You were winning. I don't know what more you wanted from a coach other than to be liked, which isn't really what they get paid to do. But he had the team producing. And you brought in a guy that lucked up and won a championship and has been feasting on it ever since. So that's a part of the issue. Fit. That's another part of the issue. Your pieces don't fit. They take turns playing well and then watch each other play. Like, it just doesn't fit. And should you trade Giannis? You don't have anybody else to trade. Like, if you're going to attempt to start over, the only way you can start over at this point is by trading Giannis, because you don't have really any other pieces to move that is going to create a nucleus around Giannis that's better than what you have now. You already made that move when you got rid of Middleton and you brought in Dame. And he just went down with an Achilles, which means he won't be ready to do anything until this time next year. So next year's season is already in peril because his money don't come off the books because he's injured. So, yeah, you're not going to be very happy next year either. No one's going to come and rescue you because no one really wants to play in Milwaukee. So Giannis is already pissed off about next year today. I don't see how this works out well for any of the parties involved. But if you're going to start over, or if you want to attempt to create a team, you're probably going to have to end up trading Giannis and Lillard and kind of do what Detroit did and go young, go completely young, and then get a couple of glue guys, a couple of veterans that'll be glad just to take the money that we're giving them, i.e. Schroeder, i.e. Tobias Harris, and that can actually have guys come up around them that they aren't going to try to stop their progress, while at the same time, they aren't so good that they're going to be making demands that are beyond reason. So that's it's a similar market. That's just the way they're going to have to go, because the Giannis train has left the station. He's not happy there. No one's going to come. I mean, he's in a LeBron type of situation in Cleveland first go around, where no one's going to come join you there. And unless they just happen to maybe trade somebody else for picks and get the picks right, and you have a young guy that comes along that, you know, but I don't know that Giannis is going to want to be around for all that. And the NBA is different than the NFL and most other sports, where if he decides to throw his weight around, there's not much that they can do about it. So I don't know, man. Like I don't know if you try to trade him to trade him to New Orleans and see if you can get Zion, so at least you have a star that won't threaten to leave you. The food's not as good in Milwaukee as it is in New Orleans. Maybe that'll help him. I mean, there are too many situations and trades that is going to work out. You're going to take a loss, but try to figure something out. The Nets have a lot of picks.
So you know me well enough to know by now, and all of you guys know, that I love providing stats and fun facts. So let me lay out some fun facts for you that I think will be appropriate here. Should they fire Doc Rivers? Yeah, of course. He's been terrible for a long time. Did you know that Doc Rivers has missed the playoffs or lost in the first round of the playoffs 14 times?
That sounds about right.
14 times. Yet he still gets credit for his 2008 title that you, me, and any friend could have coached. Just says, why should Giannis be traded? Well, here's the current roster. Giannis, Dame, Kyle Kuzma, Bobby Portis, Gary Trent Jr., Brooke Lopez, Torian Prince, Kevin Porter Jr. are the main pieces of this current roster, right? With that being said, going to give three fun facts as it goes with the Bucks. One, do you know the Bucks don't own any of their first round picks until 2031? So we're in 2025. They don't own any of their picks in the first round until 2031.
Wow.
Number two, did you know Giannis has averaged 30 points and 15 boards in his last 10 playoff games? Do you know what the Bucks' record is in those 10 games? 1-9.
Wow.
And last but not least, and this is the craziest did you know that I can imagine. In game 5, when the Bucks choked their 118-111 overtime lead with 40 seconds to go. Actually, it was 35 before the three was hit by Halliburton. But since 1997-98 season, in the playoffs, when teams are down 7 or more points with 40 seconds left in a playoff game, those teams trailing at that point were 0 for 1,609. Make that 1 in 1,609, thanks to Milwaukee. So I say all that to say that Rivers needs to be fired. Possible replacements, Michael Malone, Terry Stotts. I'm okay with even Frank Vogel, maybe James Borrego, Sam Cassell, you know, just to name a few names. But Giannis wants to win. He's 30 years old. He's not.
Does he though? Because they were winning, and he was one of the main people wanting to get rid of the coach that had them winning.
Because he didn't like the coach.
Okay, well, you were winning. Which would you rather like the coach or win? Because the situation you put yourself in is going from being a winner that didn't like the coach to being a loser. I don't know if he hadn't said that he didn't like Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers seems to be pretty likable. Maybe that's one of the things he has going for him that keeps him getting the job. But sir, what are we doing? You're wasting your prime right now. Like, this something got to give. There's no way Giannis signs another contract there. There's no way. So you got to trade him. If you lose Giannis without trading him and you have no picks till 2031, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I think there's not a doubt that they're going to trade him, because here's the reality, right? Lillard's injury, forget the Achilles part. Like, given the thrombosis that was in his leg.
Yeah, before the Achilles, you're right.
Like, that's career ending in, like, a life crisis situation.
Isn't that what got Chris Bosh? Wasn't it the same thing with the blood clots that Chris Bosh was getting when that made him force him to retire?
Exactly right. Yeah. So my point is Lillard's career, I'm not saying it is, his career could be in jeopardy. He might not play it again. So especially when you factor in that crisis, plus the Achilles, and he's 34, he might be done. And to be honest with you, I love Dame time. He's a great player. He was way too loyal to the Blazers for way too long and got the shaft. But so he deserved a better fate. I hate this for him, but I'm genuinely concerned about how that injury will impact his health and his future. So at the end of the day, I'd much rather him be healthy and okay than risk an injury. We might not see him again. And if that's the case, he traded away Middleton. If Dame time's done, then Giannis literally has nothing that's going to get him there. So they might as well trade him and get him somewhere else.
And there's no one is going to trade you for Damian Lillard at this point.
Right.
To your point, he'll be 35 years old before he'll be ready to play again. And a good bit of his game is based on speed and burst, which is going to take another year after playing on it to be back, to actually be back from it, which means you're 36. And it's not like you're an all-timer or it's not one of those situations where your game is just so sweet that you can ride certain aspects of it off into the sunset because you always have this particular piece. You don't have that particular piece in your game. So to your point, we may have seen the last we're going to see of anything close to what we used to see from Dame Lillard. So it's a nightmare right now in Milwaukee. This is worst case scenario type of situation right here, because all you have is Giannis and a couple guys. Like, you got Giannis and a couple guys. No picks. No one's going to trade you for Kyle Kuzma. No one's going to trade you for Bobby Trees. I mean, like, it's Bobby Portis is a good piece, but what are you going to get from that?
They're stuck.
They're stuck.
Yeah.
They're stuck. They got to trade Giannis. And you got to do it now before something happened to Giannis. Something that's not going to happen to Giannis, and you're really sure.
Especially now that he's still got 2 years left on his contract, I'd be trading him in the offseason. Because imagine what you get for 2 years worth of Giannis. It is prime.
Facts. Agreed.
So, wrapping up our NBA portion of this, we're going to talk about your Lakers. And so I guess my question to you would be, I guess, multiple questions. You know, how surprised were you that they lost to the Wolves, let alone in 5 games? What do you think the biggest challenge was? Where what went wrong? Is there anyone to blame? Maybe no one, but what was the main part of it? Where do they go from here? And then the other thing, just a little fun fact. Did you know not only in the series, but in the playoffs, the Lakers were the most bet on team by the public? And so Vegas is counting their money and very happy about this because they made a killing off of this. What's your reaction to what happened?
Honestly, is it surprising? Yes. I'd be lying if I said that I foresaw the Lakers going home in 5. I saw them winning the series in 5, if I'm being honest with you. While at the same time, I see the game plan and the gameplay from the Timberwolves. I see what Anthony Edwards was able to do. I see what Gobert and Reed were able to do. And they just stayed true to the plan. It became a situation where, because of the defense that they're able to play, because of the size that they have, they essentially have 2 centers out there playing at the 4 and 5 spot and completely clogs up anything you're going to get in the paint. But when one of those centers can actually pop threes, it becomes a mismatch where you don't have a center at all. Like, Jackson Hayes isn't competing under the basket with either one of those dudes. And he's the best you got. It feels like the if you're gonna make me place blame, can I say maybe we reneged and it cost us? If you play spades, you know, you renege, it's gonna cost you 3 books and everybody around you is highly upset with it, right? Maybe, just maybe, we got a little bit too cute, and instead of reneging on that trade with Charlotte, if we had got the guy that was averaging a double-double ever since we said that he wasn't healthy, at the center position, 7-foot guy, probably would have been in a better position to contend with a lot of what you're going to see out in the West, which is big centers that can score and defend. So I think maybe we got a little bit too cute there. It wasn't an X's and O's thing. I'm not blaming J.J. Redick or LeBron or Luka or anybody else. If Reeves showed up a little bit more and maybe went to what he was used to doing, maybe that helps out a little bit. But at the end of the day, there is no scheme when you don't have depth, size, height, rebounding. Like it's perfect storm. No different than some of the feats that Minnesota presented to teams on last year in the playoffs. So that's kind of where I am with that.
Yeah, so if I were to place blame one place, I'm Rob Pelinka, because for two reasons, he's guilty of two things. Number one, the most obvious thing is the reneging on the Mark Williams trade. When you traded Anthony Davis, which was a great move, giving up his injury-prone history for Luka, that's a steal and a brilliant move. But when you have it, but you also lose that interior presence when he is healthy, and they have nobody on that roster to do that. And so as a result of that, you got killed on the interior because the Wolves are more athletic and deep, and they killed him in rebounding second chance. There is a series last night where the T-Wolves got 5 offensive rebounds on one possession. Like, and finally LeBron cleared the glass, but it's like, you can't do that. And you can't
have a 40-year-old aging superstar being your center. Like, is that just that doggone?
And then the other part I put on Plink is this. Even with Luka on the roster in that trade, which was brilliant, you're not going to win a championship with essentially 3.5 players. What do I mean by that? Luka's terrific. LeBron's terrific. Austin Reeves is usually terrific, although this was a bad matchup for him. I think athletically he struggled with the quickness of the T-Wolves. It kind of slowed him down some. And the half is Rui Hachimura, right? In games 1 and 2, he was a no-show. In games 3, 4, and 5, he was much better. He played really well. But, you know, you can't beat a team in the playoffs when you really don't have the whole. And look, the one criticism for coaching that I would put on Redick is, and I understand why he did it, so please know that on a scale of 1 to 10, this is a 1, not a 10, just to be clear. So I'm part nitpicking, but from a logic standpoint, I think it was a flawed choice. And I'll also explain what I would have done differently. So in game 4, you know, in game 3, Luka was playing with an illness that held him back. He openly said, you know, I wasn't feeling great. And he gutted through it to his credit, right? In game 4, he played the whole second half.
Yeah.
LeBron James, who's 40 years old, played 46 of 48 minutes. Now, look, this is not me picking on LeBron. There is no way a 40-year-old professional should be running up and down the court taking that kind of toll on your body and all the responsibilities he has for 46 minutes. That's never a great plan. And then go figure, in game 5, LeBron's limping around, Luka's banged up. And yeah, I know there was a collision with DiVincenzo, but you can't be doing that. What would I have done differently? Well, obviously, Jackson Hayes isn't ready. That was a bad idea, right? But what I would do is I'd go back to a little playbook that I know LeBron's not a big fan of. But once I got Hachimura going for three, and we know Luka can make threes, and I know that Austin Reeves can make threes, I'd be put, rather than using Finney Smith, who's mediocre at best, or Vanderbilt, who is very athletic and plays good defense but can't shoot a ball in the ocean, I'd be playing Dalton Connect. And I'd be sitting there and I'd post up LeBron and I'd let him throw it out to four perimeter shooters and knock down threes. Because to me, either LeBron's good, he's a load in the block, he's not going to have to do as much in terms of running because he's going to be camped up low. He's going to come in a double team or you're going to have a problem dealing with him because of his strength. And if you do double him, you got a wide open shooter and all four of those guys can knock down threes. To me, and yeah, I know Connect may not play defense, but let's be honest, Luka doesn't play defense. LeBron at this point doesn't play defense very often. And Austin Reeves is mediocre on defense. So, you know, at that point, just try to score. And all four of those guys can knock down threes. To me, that would be the best play they had. But the Wolves are just, if there's any person to blame, it's the GM. Because LeBron deserves better talent around that team than what he has to deal with. You can't win a title with this roster how it is. You had a chance to get Williams, and you blew it. And by the way, Williams, you were all worried about his physicals. He played the whole damn year.
Yep. Completely agree with you, buddy. And I think we outsmarted ourselves with that one. And it was this is a backhanded compliment to Rob Pelinka. I think that he thought what he did to Dallas with sending him someone that was hurt when the trade was made is what Charlotte was trying to do to him. Mm-hmm. So he put the kibosh on it because he knew that things may not be exactly what they seemed. So, yeah, but it came back to bite us. That will be easily corrected in the offseason, though. That there are going to be plenty of people that will be willing to play with Luka Doncic. So I'm not worried about it. We'll fix that. Now, with that being said, there's something interesting going on in the wonderful world of MLB. And closing time isn't quite the same. Why are so many elite closers struggling in 2025? Is this a symptom? Is there a root cause? Is it too early in the season to really make a snap judgment just yet? How are we feeling about the situation right now?
So for me, I think that it goes back to something that my brother and I talk about a lot. The most inconsistent position or unit in baseball is the relief pitching, because your bullpen could be electric in one year and the next year be mediocre and the next year be great and then be mediocre. There's no rhyme or reason or consistency. Guys go up and down all the time, you know, and so when you look at go through the annals of closers, you know, there's been no better closer ever than Mariano Rivera. And the next closest thing I can think of is when Eckersley was in his elite dominant role with the A's. But outside of those two guys, these guys aren't consistent. Now, Chapman was great for a long time, to give him credit. So he would probably be third on that list. But you know, Clase was lights out last year, but it's not like he's been doing this for 5 years, you know, and Devin Williams, he went from the National League to the American League. So he's learning a whole new set of hitters. There's a lot of pressure in the Bronx. Not everyone is up to the challenge of dealing with the Bronx. So that's, you know, we've seen people wilt there. Not saying that that's his issue, because from the metrics, his numbers aren't bad in terms of velocity and things he's doing. He is throwing his off-speed pitches way more than he used to. It's up 12, 15%, which is getting him in trouble. Better balance. People are sitting on his pitches, but just not tipping what you're doing. But here's the other thing. Like in their case, Luke Weaver has electric stuff and was great down the stretch last year in the postseason as their closer. And the Guardians have Cade Smith, their now closer, who's terrific. He has the best stuff of everybody on their staff. So it's not like these teams, I think they actually almost improved in that area, especially if they can get those two guys right. And they're way too good to like implode. I just think it just speaks to how volatile relief pitching is. It's kind of like here today, gone tomorrow, which is why it drives me nuts when these guys get paid like 15, 20 million to close, because it's like, you're getting them for what, a year or two?
It's a hard job, but somebody got to do it. And just like that, the Leafs eliminate the Senators. Just well, by the time you guys hear this, you already know that, but it just happened as far as we're concerned.
Well, and it's funny, too, that you mentioned that, Zay, because while we're doing a quick little break here on that, the Pistons came from 12 down, and they're up 2 in the fourth quarter, the last I saw, 2-5-103. And then, for those of you guys who don't know this, in every other sport, I have a favorite team. But in hockey, I just am a fan in the playoffs. But if you made me pick two teams that I follow closely, it's actually Colorado and Vegas. And Vegas just scored to go up 3-1 with under 5 minutes to go. It's a closeout. And then the Avs are up 1-0 over Dallas, trying to force a game 7 back in Dallas. So off to a good start for both the Avs. And it looks like Vegas has Minnesota. They're about to start their golfing season here.
And if you're watching us on YouTube and keep seeing us look down or look to the right or left, just remember, we're all sports fans here. So we're just trying to keep up with the information to give you is what we're doing. So
it's funny today because I looked up and I saw Vegas score. And I'm like, maybe I didn't see this right. So I looked up again. And when I'm watching it at home, I'm like, goal! But I couldn't do that during the show, so I reined it in.
My guys, so we are at a very entertaining part of the show where we give you our top five of something, our top five all time of something. And today it is our top five things that we would change. And I think we both kind of took it from macro view, if you will. But what's your number five?
Number five, term limit for all politicians. I am tired of watching congressmen and women sit in their seats for 40 or 50 years. This is not supposed to be a career. It's supposed to be a role to serve your constituents and the people. It's we the people, not you the political career. I shouldn't have to have somebody pick your head up because you're 90 years old and you can't stay awake. So what would I do? Very simply, the max that you could serve is 12 years. Why? Because it's long enough to get in there, learn the ropes, move up the ranks, have an impact, do what you're supposed to do, but not too long that you're there forever. So to me, that's a happy medium, whether it's 2 6-year terms, 3 4-year terms, however you want to do that. I think that's the right number. That's my number five.
Interesting. We both went the political angle for our number fives. My number five, no political parties. Vote for who makes the most sense to you without having any dog whistles, without having any favorite colors, without having a favorite caricature or animal that you associate with being a donkey or an elephant. Simply vote your politics, whatever that may look like or feel like. but don't give any edge to one person or the other based on anything other than what it is that you know about said person and how you feel about that. Now, for some, you may dig deep and know a whole lot about a whole bunch of people. For others, you may not know a whole lot at all about only a few, but however you choose to go about doing that, make it about the person and how you feel they would do in this particular job. And that's across the board, not just in the seat of the presidency, across the board. Put the best people in the seats, regardless of what color they wear, and go from there. It just makes too much sense. But number four.
So my number four is, and I think that we're going to get some followers when I mention this. My number four is appropriate 4-day work weeks, Monday through Thursday, 4-day work weeks. Other countries do it. Why not us?
I mean, you could. I mean, some jobs give you the opportunity to do like 4-10s or something like that, kind of. So you can still get the hours and still get that extra day. I mean, I'd be down for that. I honestly be good with 3-12s. Give me 3 days a week, 12 hours. I still get the full, you still get my full complement of hours, but I get to be off for 4 days. You know how much production I would get done in those 3 12-hour days just because I know I'm going to be able to chill 4 days straight? Like, and it doesn't even have to be 4 days straight. It could be a work one day, off one day, work one day, off one day, 2 days back to back, like something like that. Like, but yeah, I'll support that. Okay. Number four for me, stupidity. If we can just get rid of stupid people, or at least the part of them that makes them stupid, that would just be great for everyone else. You can never get rid of ignorance, because ignorance simply means that you don't know. And stupid people tend to not know how ignorant they are. That tends to be that's the biggest part that screws it up for the rest of us. But like, some things just don't make sense. Instead of 1 + 1 = 2, it's 11 for some people, and they're proud of it. Just if we could just do something with that group of people, that would be great. It would get rid of so many issues that we wouldn't have to worry about for the rest of us if we can just get rid of stupidity. Not the person, but the lack of ability to have common sense like the rest of us. Put it that way.
I love it.
That's my number four. What's your number three?
I'm just thinking you're getting rid of a lot of people.
Not people, just their habits and their, you know, their
opportunities.
A small lobotomy or something like that. Slight change.
Ladies and gentlemen, his email address is my number three, make travel cheaper and easier. You know, like, it shouldn't cost thousands and thousands of dollars to go certain places. Like, life's too short. Allow people the chance to go where they want to go and have those life experiences, see different cultures, places, events, things. Make it easier.
I see what you did there, BK, because guess what you get to do more of with the 4-day work week?
Travel more.
Senator BK is a problem solver, you guys. I don't know if you figured this out yet, but there's a reason why we refer to this gentleman, Senator BK. Just saying. Just putting that out there.
Feel free to start my election campaign.
I'll be your campaign manager. I got you. We got this. Number three for me, isms and schisms, all of them. Like, whatever you want to throw in there. Whatever ideologies, with racisms, prejudices, a lot of that will probably already be gone once we get rid of stupidity. But just to make sure we get rid of everything we need to get rid of, we're not going to leave to chance that some of these isms and schisms won't be dealt with under the stupid umbrella. So we're going to attack that specifically. So, yeah, whatever ism or schism came to your mind when I said it, yeah, throw that in there. Get rid of it.
I love it. I love it. I love it. By the way, Zay, can we just going back real quick? So going back to my election campaign, do we just have something like BK wins in the slogan?
It just makes sense. Why switch up something makes sense?
Embarrassing if we had that and then I didn't win. But anyway,
it messed up the headlines.
Right.
BK wins, but not really.
fake news, false alarm. He doesn't. Number two. On a serious note, you want to talk about a pet peeve of mine? Nothing annoys me more than when this happens. People suck to do this. Don't ever do this. Don't let me find out that you're doing this. Just don't do it. We're going to eliminate animal cruelty. Don't be a coward. Don't be a horrible person. Don't suck at life. Please stop abusing animals. I can't say that seriously enough. That's my number two.
Completely agree. A lot of that will be eliminated again with my number four answer. I'm just saying it's the gift that keeps on giving if we get rid of stupidity. That's all I'm saying. If we can wrap this all up in a bow, other than travel, but then again, travel might not cost so much if one of the things that I'll get to in a minute here wasn't in place as well. But number two for me, sickness. Whatever form it comes in, just sickness to put us all. That's my number two.
Well, you know, great minds think alike, say, because my number one answer is eliminating something else, which is eliminate all diseases and sickness.
Yeah.
I think we've all lost loved ones because of some awful illness or disease. I don't want anyone to go through that pain or for those individuals to go through the illness and the suffering that they have to endure while going through that themselves. Let's just eliminate all that. And that's my number one.
And number one for me, greed. Get rid of greed. Do you know how much easier your life would be on everyone if greed was gone? Do you know how much sickness would be gone if people weren't greedy? Because people could afford medication. Like having a 4-day work week would be easy if corporate America wasn't greedy. Like a lot of stuff that just makes sense in life in general, we wouldn't have to deal with it if it wasn't for greed. So I'm not saying, you know, that you have to be one that gives until it hurts. But there's a certain point that your accumulation is just for fun, while you have people that are barely breathing. Like, can we have a little bit of humanity and humility? That's all I'm asking for. Not trying to make it a communist situation here. Not saying that. I would dare not speak against capitalism, but I'm just saying, like, at some point, you know, your $10,000 steak versus someone digging in the trash can kind of shit probably even out by like giving up $5 on your steak so they can get extra value, man. I mean, like, just saying. Greed.
I love it. Well said.
And that wraps up our top five all time of something this week, things that I will change. And BK, as we wrap it up, BK's best bets. We can't get out of here without putting some money in somebody's pockets. So what we got?
Yeah, so real quick, just a little current title odds updates in the NBA and NHL before I give my best bets. So currently in the NBA, the title favorite is Oklahoma City at +150, the defending champion Celtics +200, the Cavs +500, the T-Wolves, after winning last night, went from +2,500 to +1,700. The Nuggets and Clippers are sitting at +4,000. In the NHL, the current favorite now is the Panthers at +400, the Canes +475, Oilers +600, Stars +800, Vegas +900, who, by the way, did close out the Wild. of 4-2. The Jets plus 1,000. The Avs are plus 1,200. And I bring this up. The Blues are plus 6,500. Okay. And of course, those of you who know me well enough to know that I wouldn't, if you're friends and fans of the show, you know, why would BK go through all of these favorites that are all pretty close and similar and then throw out there a plus 6,500? Well, because that's one of this week's best bets. I mentioned to you earlier when we broke down the Blues and the Jets that the Jets are the more talented team. They had the best record in their regular season in the West. Here's, and I think overall, but the problem here is this. The Jets have won 3 close games at home, 2 of them in overtime. The Blues hammered the Jets 12-3 in games 3 and 4 at home. Guess where they play Friday night? Oh, yeah, they play in St. Louis. Give me the Blues in the money line to force game 7 is a series bet. Remember when I told you the Maple Leafs were vulnerable and I had the winner of the Lightning Panthers advancing past the Maple Leafs? Well, guess what? Florida's that team that advanced 4-1. Tkachuk is back and has been money in this series against the Lightning. Florida has too many offensive weapons. They're forechecking, their goaltending, their physicality. Oh, and by the way, they find a way to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, it seems like, annually over the last few years. Give me the Panthers' money line to stop the Maple Leafs. Those are this week's best bets.
Love it, BK. Love it, love it, love it, love it. And now to wrap up the show, this week's Can't Miss Weekly Rant. And this one is going to be kind of different because this just generically happened that we both kind of had the same topic of discussion, if you will, to rant about this week. So, BK, as per customary, do you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
I will go first if I can.
Take it away, my guy.
I almost always give you the honors, but I'm going to
lead off. Absolutely.
I'm going to lead off. So, let's talk about the epic draft fall of Shedeur Sanders. I know it was in one of our earlier segments, but I read some things online that were concerning to me. Not everything in life has to have some kind of racial element to it. Shedeur Sanders went to a job interview where he told teams, some teams, don't even bother drafting me. I don't want to play there. He told other teams, if you're going to draft me, make sure you have your crap together. Basically, so that you deserve to have me here. And then when he wasn't done doing that, he told executives who were going to draft him, and they provided feedback on his game film or how he played in games, no, you have it all wrong. I had it right. I'm good. You tell me any job interview that any of us would go to where you openly tell people, I don't want to go there, or you're not good enough to deserve me unless you clean your stuff up, or my bosses are wrong and I'm right, and I don't even work for you yet. That's not a racial thing. There's nothing wrong with being confident. There's nothing wrong with being really good at what you do. There's nothing wrong with believing in yourself. There's nothing wrong with being open, honest, and transparent. But you can't have an awful attitude and expect that to go well. As Taylor Swift likes to say, she likes to say, I'm the problem, it's me. No, no, Shedeur. In this case, you're the problem, it's you. Get your crap together.
So my thing is this. Can two things be true? Absolutely. Can there be some overtones of something that feels familiar, yet it not actually be contributed to that specific thing? Sure. I think that's what we have a lot of in this case. I think before knowing all the facts and before some of the comments coming out that were made during said interviews, it felt very familiar to a lot of us. Speaking of isms and schisms earlier, right? So when we see something that looks familiar, we may tend to jump on it emotionally charged before we actually know what's going on. I'm not sure if you've seen this video or not, but there's a guy on the bus and there's a little person with backpack on hopping off the bus, you know, city bus, not a school bus, city bus. And the bus driver kicks the little kid off the bus. Everyone's looking around like, what's going on here? What just happened? Like, did we just see that? Your instinct is going to say, protect the child. Your instinct is going to say, whatever this is, I don't know all the details, but what I saw was enough to make me formulate an opinion. You continue to watch the video and you realize that this is like a 40-year-old little person who did something on the bus that they shouldn't have done, and not a fifth grader with a backpack on coming home from school. So a lot of the preconceived notions that we thought we had is like, oops, yeah, there's definitely several reasons that I could see myself kicking a 40-year-old in the behind off of a bus, depending on what just went down. And I kind of feel like, without knowing some of the things that were said, for instance, as you stated, he indicated there were teams that he wouldn't play for, situations that he wouldn't play in. He also stated to just about every team during the pre-draft process that he wasn't a trust fund baby and his daddy didn't set him up like that. I guess this is his way of saying he's a blue collar worker and he's going to bring his lunch pail to work every day. It's just kind of disingenuous when you're at the same time flashing $100,000 Rolex. Like, you can't have it both ways. Like, I don't know if that's the one-liner that you were told to say in the interview to attempt to seem as if you had more humility or humbleness than was there, but that wasn't it either. Like, what I get out of everything that I've heard is what I saw, I'm not 100% sure what it was, and I don't know how to take it, but I'm pretty sure that if it was in my locker room, it might not go the way that we want it to go. So I'm not going to deal with it, especially since how I might have to deal with his family as well. And that could be a circus. I don't know, but I don't want to be the one to find out. So yeah, we're just going to kick the can on down the road and not deal with this at all. And as BK says often, sometimes this is just why we can't have nice things. And that pretty much wraps it up for this week. We will be back to you on Wednesday with the Fantasy Football Show and back to you on next Friday with the flagship Gospel Sports Truth podcast. Until then, remember, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
We out.
Later, y'all.